Veritex Community Bank Studios. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. Brendan behind the glass. It is a Tuesday edition of The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN at 92.5. There was a football game last night. Don't really want to talk about it a whole lot. We had Rams minus 1.5, and Shanahan told McVay again and reminded him who his daddy is. It's crazy how Shanahan just owns McVay.
Like, it really is.
What's going on? Now, the Rams got him in the NFC Championship game, so they got him when it mattered the most. But regular season Shanahan, regular season McVay, it's like me versus you and who said it.
No, it's not even close. It's like the opposite. But here's the thing. The weirdest part about this is forever and a day, Kyle Shanahan was the end-all, be-all for the next generation of genius coaches.
I like him.
I don't argue with his offensive ingenuity. But then all of a sudden, McVay was the guy that took over for everybody, including Shanahan. The 28-3 in the Super Bowl happened. McVay. Man, Shanahan, whenever he wants, can do whatever the hell he wants, especially in the postseason. I saw him do it to Green Bay, but I mean, what he does to the Rams and a guy that's supposed to be the genius in McVay, it's amazing sometimes.
Yeah. So you had that matchup yesterday of a couple of NFC West teams. Rams, of course, came out of the NFC last year on their way to winning a Super Bowl. And Brendan, who's a Detroit Lion fan, celebrated like it was his own. San Francisco, after a tough loss at the beginning of the season, the rain game against Chicago, they lose their quarterback, of course, at the very beginning of Trey Lance, after they traded all those picks to move up and get him, thinking he would be their guy, be the guy that instead of going to the NFC Championship game can take them over the hump. So you're looking at the NFC. You have a couple of teams there that you expect to be contenders. You expect to be in the race. You expect to be in the playoffs. Would either one of those two teams crack, let's say, your top two? Like, who's the best team in the NFC as we talk today after four games into the NFL season?
Well, I don't think you can dispute it's the only undefeated team left.
Wow.
I think it's the Eagles. And I'm not sold on Jalen Hurts for a full season. I'm not sold on Jalen Hurts being a starting quarterback in the NFL for a playoff team. I saw what Jalen Hurts did in the playoffs a year ago. Kudos to Jalen Hurts for the start that he's had to the season. He and Lamar Jackson are probably the leading candidates for MVP right now. But he only had 200 yards with a pick last weekend, where he kind of came back to earth. But when you're 4-0 and you're the only remaining unbeaten team in the NFC, you flat out deserve to be number one on the list.
Hold on. What? I don't feel like you're allowed to do this.
What do you mean? What am I not allowed to
do? You don't believe in Jalen Hurts, but you think the Eagles are the best team in the league?
Yeah. For right now. Right now, as we sit 4 weeks in, you can't dispute a team, a full roster, a team that's 4-0. Do I believe at the end of the year I would say the same thing? I do not, because I don't believe that they will be the same team. He will not be the same quarterback. He will not be a contender for MVP.
It's phrasing, right? It's the way you phrase the question, the way you phrase the answer. Right now, best team in the NFC, Philadelphia Eagles.
I answered it.
We can all look at the standings and see that the Eagles have been the best team, but I'm curious if you think they are.
So you're talking about who you trust the most in the NFC.
Who do you think is the best team in the
NFC at the end of the year?
Look, Alex, if you'd have phrased the question as who will be the best team in the NFC at the end of the year.
Rest in peace, by the way.
Then I will, yes, RIP Alex Trebek, but I didn't say Trebek, so it could have been any Alex.
He's just renamed me.
I would say at the end of the year it would not be the Philadelphia Eagles. I believe that there are plenty of teams in the NFC that will be above them. And I think, look, Tampa Bay, to me, they got exposed a little bit Sunday night. But Pat Mahomes, when he's on his game, it's tough for anybody to stop with the weapons that he still has. But I think Tampa Bay's defense is really good. And I think Tom Brady's arm is still really strong. It's just a matter of their offensive line and their running game being able to do what they need to do to make them a Super Bowl caliber team. I'd love to say Green Bay. I believe at the end of the season I can say Green Bay. But right now I can't even say Green Bay. I think right now it's the Eagles, and I would say second, I would still put Tampa Bay in the conversation for what they've even already been able to do with all the injuries and things they've dealt with. I'm not a believer in the Cowboys either. I know there's a lot of people that are.
Oh, just wait till they get Dak back.
That's the bigger thing. If that's a controversy at all, that's ridiculous.
It's not. Jerry Jones, I don't know what Jerry Jones is doing.
But you know what? What the Cowboys really should do is see what Cooper Rush has been able to do and not rush Dak back. They're talking about he might play this week. Why the hell would you want to play him this week?
There's two things. One, you ride Cooper Rush until you can't ride Cooper Rush anymore or until Dak Prescott's 100% and then 100% plus one more week.
Yep.
Also, some of the things they've been successful doing with Cooper Rush, maybe you go a little bit more conservative with Dak Prescott. Because I think at times Dak Prescott can turn into some negative plays that cost the team. And we're seeing right now that Dallas doesn't need, you know, elite quarterback play in order to win games. Is the NFC East all of a sudden the best division in the NFC? You have the Eagles, who are 4-0, who, you know, have played the best football. They're the only undefeated team in the NFL. Dallas and New York are both 3-1. There's not another team. There's not another division in the NFC that has three teams that have at least three wins. So we always like criticize the NFC East, but the Eagles look really good. I think the Cowboys are a playoff team, and you could even convince me that the Giants are smoke and mirrors, but they've won three of their four games. So you have to take that seriously. The best team in the NFC for me, like if I'm just the one team that I trust more than anybody else, because I think the best two teams are in the AFC. I think that Kansas City and Buffalo are the two best teams in the entire league. Mm-hmm. But then the NFC might have teams 3-7 because the NFC is really, really deep. Like, it's going to be a gauntlet to get through the NFC playoffs. It's hard for me to go against Aaron Rodgers. And I know Rodgers hasn't had tremendous amount of postseason success. They have a legitimate defense. They have two running backs that you can count on. So if one of them gets hurt, you still have another one that you can count on. I also think that the receiver play is going to get better. Like, Dobbs has potential. Yep. Dobbs has flash potential. Dobbs, a rookie, he's also flashed turnovers. He fumbled in the game this past week against the Patriots. He dropped the touchdown in the end zone, as you well know. Christian Watson, they haven't used him a whole lot, but the dude's a specimen. He had a touchdown in the game against the Patriots.
They're using him more in the running game right now than they are in the passing game. That's because he dropped that deep ball from Rodgers. But you're right. Those two guys by midseason will be bigger parts of the offense.
I don't want to poo-poo on what Philadelphia is doing either, though, because
their defense is good.
Their defense is really good. Their defense is really good. They shut out Jacksonville after Jacksonville jumped out to a 14-0 lead the other day. They've given up 71 points on the entire season, and they have the best point differential in the entire NFC. So I do think that the Eagles are legit. Offensively, is their biggest weakness, like Jalen Hurts' accuracy, things like that. It probably could still be, but Jalen Hurts has improved his game tremendously. Mm-hmm. One other thing that helps them out offensively is they've catered their offense around Jalen Hurts. Miles Sanders proved to be a pretty good running back again this past week against Jacksonville. And even though I don't think Jalen Hurts is a top five quarterback, top 10 quarterback, he still has Devontae Smith and A.J. Brown. So, like, those two receivers, and Dallas Goedert's a really good tight end, too.
This is like when we talk about college quarterbacks that have such good All-American receivers that it's hard not to be able to throw the ball to get them completions. Yep. When you've got guys that good running routes for you, it makes a difference in the NFL when the windows are a lot smaller to put the ball in, but those guys create enough separation to where it's an advantage for any quarterback.
If you're stacking up every NFC quarterback and you're giving them like the same target, you're giving them the same offense, all of that, like Jalen Hurts isn't going to be the best. But whenever you factor in how Philadelphia is running their offense, and Jalen Hurts has improved tremendously. This isn't like the same Jalen Hurts that we were, you know, criticizing last year. He has improved tremendously. But then you have the other players around him, and it's like the rising tide raises all boats, right? So you have a Brown and a Smith and a Goddard. You have Miles Sanders, who's a real deal. Gainwell's fine in the backfield as well. Like, that Philadelphia roster is so good that Jalen Hurts being a top 15 quarterback, even if he's not top 5, top 10, being a top 15 quarterback is going to make them a threat, especially with the defense. The defense is going to carry them. The offense has a bunch of weapons, and Jalen Hurts isn't bad. So I have to take the Eagles seriously. I don't have more trust in Philadelphia than I do Green Bay, frankly, because of Rodgers. Tampa Bay has questions to me. You're right. They got exposed against Kansas City, and there's rumors that Tom Brady's hired a divorce lawyer.
Well, yeah, I mean, if that's going to be a deal, the thing that's more conversational in my household is how much plastic surgery did he have, because he looks 21. But when you look at Fournette, to me, that's the biggest question. They've always had two running backs that can, you know, spell the other guy and give you some burst and do some things. They don't have that this year, and Fournette does not look to be as effective as they need him to be, especially when they get into bigger games late in the season. I think they got to fortify their running game. I think the offensive line still has question marks. And we know Brady hates to get hit, and that's why he struggled Sunday night when he got rattled.
Yep.
But overall, that defense, when you talk about David and you talk about White and you talk about their secondary and some of their front seven guys, when they get rolling, that defense is really, really tough. And they were exposed a little bit with Mahomes, But you don't see many Patrick Mahomes-type offenses in the NFC. That's why I think you got to give them their kudos.
See, there's so many teams that I think could be in contention for, like, top two or NFC championship-caliber teams, because the Eagles are certainly that. They've proven that through four games. Green Bay, you always have to take them seriously as a threat. Tampa Bay is a threat to go to an NFC championship game, even if we have our feelings about Tampa, or I have my feelings about Tampa. Mm-hmm. I'm not really trusting Minnesota at 3-1.
Like, Kirk Cousins is still their quarterback, right?
Yeah. I mean,
then there's not a whole lot of trust for me.
They escaped London, you know, with a couple of donks off the upright, then the crossbar to beat a Saints team who was being guided by the Red Rocket. Shout out Katie High School. No offense there. I can't really trust them. Dallas, I need to kind of wait and see what they really look like with Dak Prescott. I think it's a good team, but I'm not quite putting them on the tier of Green Bay, Tampa Bay, maybe even Philadelphia. And then the two teams we saw yesterday are both capable of being NFC championship teams, although I feel a little bit worse about San Francisco and L.A. than I did at, let's say, the start of the season.
I'd agree with that. And I think that as much as Jimmy G, thank goodness they didn't trade him, that Jimmy G is their savior right now, because now they're still being in. We're still talking about them as being a team that could go a long way. When you look at what the Rams are supposed to be, coming off getting their quarterback, coming off winning a Super Bowl, coming off still having Aaron Donald and all the different guys that they have at the big key skill positions, they're supposed to be better than they showed last night. They really did not show out at all last night, and they showed a lot of question marks. So I think that you're right. These are two teams that at least one of them we were talking about being a team that could easily win a second Super Bowl. And you're looking at both teams last night going, you got to respect those teams because they're well-coached and they're going to be there and be prepared at the end of the year.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Who's the best team in the NFC? Who's in that category for you? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham on Twitter. Discussing who's the top team in the NFC, I can tell you who's the top company in the HR and payroll space. It's HR&P, Human Resources and Payroll. It's Cougar, owned by Mike Holley. They've been members of the Cougar 100 for the 8th year in a row. They're a fixture there. You've seen the HR&P signage at U of H games, football, basketball, baseball, all of them. You've seen their building off the Beltway with that beautiful U of H flag hanging outside of it. But business owners, let HR&P help you. HR compliance, they can help there. Benefits administration, another thing. Payroll, onboarding, HR&P can help in any or all of those areas. There's no boxes with HR&P. Doesn't matter how small, doesn't matter how big. HR&P will completely customize a plan for what you and your business needs. You have a problem, you have an issue, you want to take a little bit off your plate, a lot off your plate, HR&P will find a way to help that suits you and your business. They do it in a way that's unique as well. Technology meets service. They have the best tech. You'll love that, but you'll also love their service. Guaranteed fulfillment. You'll be talking to a stranger on a call board. You'll be talking to someone who knows your business needs. I can speak to that as an employee of an employer, Gal Media, who uses HR&P. Whenever Branham Baby came around, I needed some insurance for Branham Baby. I called up HR&P, and they took care of it like that. Give them a call right now, 281-880-6525. Let HR&P customize a plan for you, 281-880-6525, or check them out at HRP.net. That's HRP.net.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
According to the New York Post and Page Six, Tom Brady and Gisele Bündchen have hired divorce lawyers. Do we believe the New York Post and Page Six and the Killer Bees?
It's normally entertaining when you read some of that stuff. I don't know that I completely believe them, but because it's not the Enquirer.
You like the tabloids?
You like the drama.
I do.
I like the fact that when we're looking for non-sports stories, it's a good place to go. The New York Post normally has some decent off-the-wall stories that we can pull from. But from some of the things that I had heard for before the first game of the regular season, they said it was not uncommon for them to have a knockdown dragout where she takes off or he, you know, and they separate for a little bit, and then they come back and they work things out and everything's good. Evidently, this time was a little bit more dramatic, and now it looks like there's taking another turn.
I mean, if it's true, I mean, he was gone for a couple weeks from camp. He said he's a 45-year-old man that, you know, he has things going on in his life. Did Tom Brady just pick playing football at the age of 45 over Gisele?
She still have her fastball, you think?
Tom Brady still throws a really good fastball. Yeah,
so Tom Brady
still
touch that. I'm curious from the Hive.
Sling it a little.
Do you think Giselle one still has her fastball? And two, here's the bigger question. Everybody always says she makes more money than him.
Mm-hmm.
Still, I don't think she's done anything in quite a while. I don't know if there's residuals in modeling. I don't know how that works.
Yeah,
but I would make sure if there's the divorce attorneys, I'd be like, you know that contract that's coming up with Fox? That hasn't started yet, so you don't have any right to my $375 million.
What if I told you I thought her fastball was always a little bit slower than everyone thought?
You know what? This might be the first time in the history of this show that I would agree with you. I have never been a huge Giselle Bundchen fan and thought that she was like top of the charts in terms of modeling and looks and all that other stuff. But a lot of people obviously did.
All right, I'm just pulling up the Bad Take Boulevard document right now just so I can go ahead and bookmark this.
So you disagree with us, but you won't say it.
I'm just saying I'm going to leave it up to the Hive, see what they think.
Okay,
713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. We were talking about the best team in the NFC. Who's the best team in the NFC? Who's the second best team in the NFC? Jetro on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. Don't sleep on the 49ers. It's hard for me to take a Jimmy Garoppolo-led team seriously. I'll be honest. I don't think that Jimmy Garoppolo is capable of leading a team to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, no. I mean,
again,
I think it's one thing. I think it's one thing to say that for the regular season and as a game manager with a defense like that, that they're capable of winning football games. They're going to get to the playoffs. They might even win the division. But Jimmy G is a guy, and they even said it last night on the telecast, what we've seen for a long time. As good as Jimmy G is at being a game manager and doing the things necessary to be just enough, he also has a knack for right when you don't need him to do something stupid, he can flat out almost try and give one away. He almost gave the game away against Green Bay in Green Bay last year. The Super Bowl, he missed a wide open Emmanuel Sanders that would have won them the Super Bowl. There's times that he throws a pick at the most inopportune times to where I'm with you. I don't know that I can trust him in the playoffs. I can trust him in the regular season. And I'm a firm believer he's better than Trey Lance. And I thought that that's the reason why they should have kept him all along and never even thought about trading him. But I don't trust him in the playoffs either to get all the way there.
Yeah, it's hard for me to take the Niners seriously because of that. OG saying Eagles' best win is the Vikings, LOL. As my good booty always says, miss me with that. I think he's talking about you being his good
B-U-D-Y. Who said that?
B-U-D-Y. OG did. He said miss me with that. The Eagles' schedule.
OG's looked, just a complete pain in the ass.
I understand what he's saying. I mean, they beat Detroit, even though, I mean, Detroit had... They still had their players, right? They still had St. Brown. They still had Swift whenever they beat them in Detroit in week one. They beat Minnesota. They beat up on them by 17. They beat up on the Washington football team. They came from a 14-0 deficit to beat Jacksonville by 8. So I understand where OG's coming from. That's not a murderer's row for a schedule in the NFL. My counterpoint would be this, though. How many teams in the NFL have won every single one of their games? It is hard in the NFL to win four straight against the worst four teams in the NFL. We can point to the Houston Texans as an example. The Houston Texans haven't even lost four straight. Now, they haven't won one, but they came really close to beating the Colts, right? Up 20-3. They came really close to beating Denver in Denver. They should have beaten Chicago in Chicago. It's not easy to win four in a row against any NFL team. So the schedule's not great, but four in a row against the NFL is four in a row against the NFL.
Yeah, no, look, I mean, that's... Four in a row in the end. Look, as much you're right. We talk about that Texans run a couple years ago where they won the nine in a row.
After starting 0-3.
And you could look at it and say, hey, kudos to them. They won nine in a row. That's really hard to do in the NFL. And then when you look at how they won, everything's got to line up so perfectly right that there was a lot of things that happened that were fluky along the way.
Mm-hmm.
But still, the NFL is a really tough league. They talk about road games being tough, and they talk about divisional matchups being tougher, even if the team isn't really good that you're playing. Look, last week, people thought that Green Bay should have blown the doors off the Patriots before their third-string quarterback took over.
Zeppy.
And it went to overtime. So anything can happen in the league. So that's why you say it is so tough to do what the Eagles have done, what... You know, the Texans could have done, the Texans could have won their first three games. They were in all three games. I'm not going to say they should have beat or could have beat the Chargers, but even then it was a 3-point game in the fourth quarter.
They had the ball to take the lead.
Yeah. So comebacks happen. The funny thing was the running joke in the NBA forever and it was ever in a day was if you were down 20 in the first half, it's the NBA. Everybody makes a run. You'll be back into it sometime in the second half. And most times it happens. But truth be told, in the NFL, you're never truly out of it. Jacksonville was up 14-0 on the Eagles. Baltimore was up 17-3 on the Bills. Both teams lost the game.
Yeah. You got to have a little bit of juice, though, offensively. Although Davis Mills almost led the comeback against the Chargers, if you want to say that he has a little bit of a juice in the tank for Davis Mills. 3-3-6-4, Packers struggled against a third-string quarterback. I think this is towards me saying that I believe the Packers more than anybody else in the NFC. Part of this is projecting, because I like what I've seen from the Packers defensively. The offense isn't clicking on all cylinders. The offense has ways to go, but I trust that they're going to figure it out, partly because they have, I think, the best quarterback in the last couple of decades. Some people point to his playoff misfortune, I guess, lack of success in the playoffs, things like that. But I also think that the Packers' offense is going to be better in Week 10 than it is right now. Like, young players get better. They're going to get better. Dobbs and Watson will get better.
I agree, but with that said, and I was talking to some guys at the gym about this today, in my opinion, they're going to make a move before the deadline. Like, the one thing that they've said, that when everybody said, hey, with losing Davante Adams, you got to make a move before the season starts. And they basically said, look, and their schedule's pretty soft now for the next couple weeks. They basically said, by the time they get to the midseason point, when they know that they should probably have, they're on their way to at least making the playoffs, whether they win the division or not, you can bring in a receiver midseason, and you can get him ready before the stretch run. Mm-hmm. And so whether they go look at OBJ, or they go try and make a trade.
Who's visiting the Giants, by the way?
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
See, I don't think he wants to play on turf anymore, because I think turf has been a real menace to that knee.
He wants to play with Vanilla Vic and Daniel Jones.
Well, I think he'd be really good on natural grass. I think it's real dangerous with two ACLs still playing on turf.
I agree with that.
But I think that they'll look at OBJ. I think they'll definitely call Seattle a few times and see if there's a chance that DK Metcalf's on the board. But, of course,
Seattle's in the playoff race.
I was going to say, Seattle winning that damn game against the Lions last week.
I've been telling you all this for a long time. Seattle's not as bad as people think.
I think they're hot garbage and doing it with smoke and mirrors. But, look, I can't argue with the fact that they beat the Lions, who everybody had as a sexy outside chance pick to make the playoffs.
I think Jeremy might have.
Jeez.
Who did I have as the playoff team?
Oh, I did. I just know you were a fan of the Lions.
Yeah, I don't know if I had them in the playoffs. I said they could be like a dark horse playoff contender. I mean, hey, they can score points. Brandon T, is it harder to win four games in a row in the NFL, or is it harder to lose four games in a row in the NFL? I think it's harder to win four games in a row. Anybody can lose four straight. You can quit on the team and lose four straight. It's much harder to win four in a row in the NFL.
You know what? I would tend to agree with that because of the fact that, like you said, I mean, there's a ton of Laremy Tunsils out there that when they're in a playoff hunt and they're competitive as a team, guys are going to give you their all. And the minute that they know the season's over, they're playing not to get hurt, and they start pulling the ripcord. The emergency brake has been pulled. We saw Justin Reed do this before he left the Texans. Like, making business decisions is a pretty common thing when your team's not going to make the playoffs, and you can lose four in a row in a hurry.
Yeah, I mean, if the Texans are 0-7-1, I think there's a couple of quit candidates that are on the 53. Waka on our Twitch says, let's not use the Texans as a barometer for anything. I understand where you're coming from. 713-780-ESPN. I want to ask you this, though. No one on this show, even Brendan now, wants to move on from Davis Mills. Brendan never wanted to. Brendan loves Davis Mills. But no one wants to move on from Davis Mills, as bad as it gets. But what does turning it around for Davis Mills look like, and how does it pertain to the Texans for the rest of the year? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. We don't want to quit on Davis Mills for the rest of the regular season, just like I would never quit on Gentle Ben. Why? Because I like a good drink at the end of the day. Why? Because they're better than anyone else. Vodka, gin, bourbon, all part of the rotation for me. Should be in your rotation as well. And Gentle Ben Spirits does it better than anyone. They use their state-of-the-art, innovative Proseto craft technology that's better in purity, it's better in aroma, and it's better in taste than your favorite brand of vodka, gin, or bourbon. Purification of Gentle Ben is unrivaled. You'll love what's not in it. Try a sip of Gentle Ben, compare it to your brand. You're going to taste the huge difference that I did when Ricky Ford, owner of Gentle Ben Spirits, by the way, A&M class of 85, had me out to his tasting room in Alvin to see what I thought. And ever since then, I've been a Gentle Ben man. It is smooth. It is clean. It eliminates the burn How about you enjoy your drink? Don't work through your drink. You can find Gentlebin Vodka and Gin at Total Wine. Specs also online at gentlebin.com. If you're in the Pearland area, head over to Broadway. Broadway Liquor carrying that Gentlebin Vodka and Gin. If you're looking for the bourbon, you have to head to the tasting room in Alvin to do that. It is a fantastic spot to hang out. Enjoy that 94-proof bourbon that was the winner of the double platinum at the Ascot Awards this year, exclusive to the tasting room in Alvin. Sit back with good company and raise a glass of the very best Gentlebin.
Enjoy.
Razor sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the killer bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
King of all Twitches said Brock Mills is the future. I don't know who that is. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Total Dallas saying at some Total Dallas is the authority when it comes to Houston Texans football, by the way. At some point, having Davis Mills is going to be as bad as having Easterby. Look, the Texans have hit Easterby under the rug. Like, they've swept him under
the rug.
They really
have.
I hate even talking about Easterby when it pertains to this current, like, rendition of the Houston Texans. Like, does Easterby a focal piece of the history of the Texans leading up to this point? Yes, absolutely, and he should be mentioned when discussing that. When you're talking about, like, the 2022 Houston Texans and going forward, I just don't believe that Jack Easterby has any pull, any sway, any power to get anything done of significance within the organization.
I think that when we talk, especially when we talk to some of the national guys, too, that you get to the point where you realize we all make mistakes and you try to rectify them. And I think that one of the things that they realized was maybe whether they empowered Jack too much or they gave him too much leeway because of the fact that he was eventually one of the guys that were significant in terms of getting rid of Bill O'Brien, telling how the players really felt. He had buddied up to Cal. They realized you can be Cal's buddy. They can go to brunch after church. You can do some things with note cards and you know, Bible study. But that doesn't, and handing out game balls, but that doesn't mean that you should have a very public, very publicized role on a day-to-day basis. And I think they've done everything they could to minimize the attention that he got.
Yeah, I think they've done a good job of minimizing it. I do think that they've, what's the opposite of empower? Depower? Like, I don't know the opposite of empower. They've taken the power away from Jack Easterby.
Kind of castrated his power.
Yeah, there we go. Let's go with that. I like that. 713-780-ESPN. And Davis Mills, though. Lovie Smith yesterday. Did you see Kyle Allen loosening up during the Texans game? Because a lot of people saw Kyle Allen warming up and they ran with it. Oh, is Davis Mills being benched? Is Lovie Smith thinking about going to Kyle Allen? There's a lot of times in an NFL game where the backup quarterback just feels like throwing the football. I never felt like Davis Mills was on the verge of being taken out of that game. Did you?
No, not at all. Here's the thing. When I saw that, the one thing that came to my mind was there's an injury somewhere that we're not aware of. He got dinged up or something happened in concussion protocol or otherwise where you're just looking out for the team's best interest. He might have to sit out a series or something like that.
Right, yeah. Maybe that there was like a nick to his thumb. Remember, he had that little sore thumb. I didn't think that in any sort of, you know, any way in the world that Davis Mills was going to be pulled from that game. Anyways, Lovie Smith was asked. Lovie was a little sassy to the media yesterday, by the way. We'll get to some Lovie Smith sound throughout the show, or he was showing a little sass towards the Houston media. But he was asked about, hey, look, is there any chance that Davis Mills will not be the Houston Texans quarterback this year?
We're not making a change at the quarterback position. The things we've talked about is with Davis leading us and whatever. Davis and everyone, coaches, what we all need to do better. Did I just tell you we're in the fourth quarter with, you know who our quarterback was that led us in position to take the lead there at the end? Davis Mills. He's our quarterback.
Lovie loves going back and forth with the media. He's good at it, too. I enjoy it.
Well, but he made himself an official Mills Mafia member.
That's right.
A few weeks ago.
With Barstool.
Yeah.
With Big Cat, I think it
was.
That's
right. Exactly right.
Yeah, he's part of the Mills Mafia. But is there any way in the world that Davis Mills, look, injury aside, like we all agree, right, that Davis Mills should be the starting quarterback for the Texans every game.
No question.
All 17, even if he looks like the worst quarterback in the world?
No question.
We all agree with that, right? The bench was talking about this the other day. What if he turns it around? What if Davis Mills turns it around? To which I asked the question. This was RJ, right, that posted this. If he, Davis Mills, turns it around, would you skip on a quarterback prospect this year to keep Davis Mills next season? Before we talk about that, what does turning it around even mean? Like, define that for me. define what turning it around means for Davis Mills, because I need to know.
I think turning it around for Davis Mills is doing some of the things that we've been nitpicking apart, but or picking apart the obvious on. I mean, I think it's where he's not he's able to make the easy the simple throws. He's able to make the basic throws of being a quarterback in the NFL. That's just to start with, like being able to complete an 8-yard out and put it where it needs to go, or a crossing pattern and not throwing it behind a receiver. It's, you know, or Brandon Cooks at the goal line or in other places, Nico Collins putting it between their left hand and their right hand where their numbers are, instead of putting it somewhere by their ear hole. And then after that, it's being able to do what I said at the start of the year. Take this team on drives that end up in points. Sustainable movement of the offense, where you're able to sustain drives, you're able to get points, you're able to look like you're not only in control of the huddle, you're in control of the play, and you're in control of your own actions. Because right now, we haven't seen any of that stuff. If we see all of that, then I believe the numbers are going to improve. Mm-hmm. I believe that the turnovers are going to go down. And then we've even gotten to what we said before, which was pocket presence and that internal clock. I think that'll all take care of itself if he can take care of the other things.
Okay, so that's a pretty good definition of what turning it around looks like. And you could even maybe, you know, dumb it down for me, being a layman that I am, and say, hey, just perform like you did in the last five games last year, right? That's turning it around from your first four starts this year. So they posted the poll. If he turns it around, would you skip on a quarterback prospect this year to keep Davis Mills next season? 66% said absolutely not. That was the heavy winner of this poll. But what if he does? What if he does turn it around to that level? Somebody texted us yesterday. We didn't get to it. Like, how many wins does Davis Mills need to have for him to be the quarterback next year? I would eliminate that stat from the conversation when you're talking about Davis Mills. How many games this team wins, I'm not going to like have my evaluation of Davis Mills right on that. But if he turns it around to a level that you just defined, are you passing on a quarterback in the 2023 NFL draft?
I've said it before. I'm going to say it again, and I'm going to stay adamant that I'm going to not change my opinion, and that is nothing will preclude me from taking a quarterback at the end of this season. I just need to know if Davis Mills is going to be a guy that is going to be a quarterback in the NFL that, whether for my team or another team, can prove to be either a very good backup, or there's a chance for a team that is, you know, doing some rebuilding themselves, may want him as a starting quarterback. But there's nothing that he does, especially at this point in the season with what he's already shown you, there's nothing that he can turn around and nothing that he can do the rest of the way that's going to tell me I'm not going to take a quarterback with one of those two first-round picks, simply because I want competition, which he didn't have a year ago, and I know that I can get return on that investment that I used a third-round pick to get from him, regardless if he shows out or shows up and shows that he can play.
Yeah. Right now, you couldn't. I don't think you can get a third-round pick for Davis right now, but if he turns it around.
Right now, yeah, if he shows improvements, and he doesn't have to completely turn around, but if he shows improvement, I believe I can still get something for him somewhere else, or I can make sure that he's my backup quarterback in a year's time. And look, you may take a quarterback, and there's the other part of the scenario. You may take a quarterback in this year's draft, and he's not ready to start week one of next year's regular season, and Davis Mills, who's been there, done that, and started all these games for you, is fully capable of being a bridge quarterback that starts the season again next season.
Ross just asked, if you pick a new quarterback in the draft, would you still start Mills in the beginning of the season next year? I guess it depends on where they are.
I think you absolutely would. It depends on the progress that the quarterback you took in the draft makes and how confident you are that they can take the reins and start going. If it's not from week one, you got a guy that's been there that can do it for you for a couple weeks while you buy time or however much time you need.
I'm not saying that you can't do that, but the situation that you would be putting both quarterbacks into, like, this fan base is going to be screaming for that quarterback
no doubt
to start.
I mean, this would be Deshaun Watson and Tom Savage times 10.
I'm not saying you can't.
We saw
a more recent
version of this.
Well, not in Houston, right?
No, this is Mitch Trubisky and Kenny Pickett. Because people in Pittsburgh all the way through the preseason were saying Kenny Pickett needs to start week one. Kenny Pickett is ready, and he should be rolling week one. Now, they made the change this week, but Trubisky started the first couple games of the season. Kenny Pickett had a chance to get a little bit more seasoning.
He threw three picks and won the job.
Yeah,
which is
bizarre. But he completed all of his passes.
7 of 10, three picks, never hit the ground. 6670, what's wrong with drafting a quarterback and have Mills be the initial starter next year? Start the rookie
nothing
week 4-5 and let him back up. It would be Deshaun Watson and Savage, where you're trading up to draft a quarterback at number 12 when you have a pretty decent roster around him, and then you're going with this mediocre, Tom Savage wasn't even a journeyman, just a mediocre quarterback. It would be that all over again. I thought one of the key things that you said, though, is with one of their first rounders. Like, I was going to challenge you and push back on you to say, like, if they have a top three pick and you're drafting a quarterback in the top three, that means you're either getting Bryce Young, Will Levis, or C.J. Stroud. If you're getting one of those three quarterbacks, I can't imagine a scenario where Davis Mills is the starter over one of those three guys. Now, if you're going with like a second-tier quarterback prospect with that Cleveland pick, wherever that falls, maybe it's just outside the playoffs, maybe it's just inside the playoffs, that I think would be more likely where Mills could be the starter. You're grooming a rookie quarterback that would eventually take over. But if you're using your pick to take one of the big three, I don't envision any sort of scenario where Davis Mills is starting over any of those three guys.
See, I think when you talk about the big three, I think there's different levels in my mind of where they are in their advancement as a quarterback getting ready for the NFL. I think if you took a Stroud, I think Stroud would be a guy that you might have to season a little bit more.
Yeah, where is he at from the NFL game? I think it's a fair point.
Yeah, so that's where I think that Mills could possibly and conceivably still start. I think that you take a guy like Bryce Young, and we've said he's not the prototypical Nick Caserio-type quarterback, but I think in terms of pocket presence and understanding reading defenses and making the smart read and the right play, he's proven he can do that, and he did that in the Texas game and a lot of other games for Alabama already. I think Levis and other guys, they're kind of in between. We'll see where they would be and where you think that they could be for you right away. But I don't think there's anything bad with it. Davis Mills has job security, and Davis Mills could start the season. And if Davis Mills plays well while you're getting that seat warm for whoever's going to take it, Davis Mills is going to be a hot commodity that's wanted by other teams, possibly as a starter, even if it's not for you.
I have a tough time seeing that happen.
I agree with you, but I'm just painting the picture of all the different potential scenarios that could play out.
713-780-ESPN. If Davis Mills turns it around, can you envision a scenario where the Texans don't draft a rookie quarterback in the 23 draft? 713-780-3776. And what does that turnaround have to be for Davis Mills to get to that point? But can we agree on this? The bigger the hole he digs to start the year, so far four games, I think the hole is pretty big. It would be harder and harder to get out of that, right? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Howard Balza makes his 2022 Killer Bee debut at the top of the hour. NFL Hall of Fame voter. I'm curious what he thinks about Tua, because he's kind of a throwback, you know, used to watch football, the leather helmet days. I'm curious what Balzer thinks about concussion protocols in this new day and age in the NFL. Ask the question going to break, 713-780-ESPN. The bigger the hole that Davis Mills digs to start the year, the harder it would be to get out of it, right? 713-780-3776. Like, if Davis Mills last year, 2021, had a five-game stretch where people were chomping at the bit, ready for him to be the starter in 2022. If he has his last five-game stretch this year where it's similar to that, where it's like, oh, man, we're going to have the number one pick. Davis Mills, again, looks like he is competent. He looks like he could potentially be worthy of starting at the quarterback position for an NFL team. And boy, I really like Willie Anderson at the top of the draft. Like, he could potentially have that stretch for a month, the final month of the year. But do you think that the bigger hole that he digged for himself at the start of the year, we're currently seeing this, because right now through four games, I think he's been a little bit better in the last two than he was the first two, but overall through four, he's not been good. He's making Nick Caserio's decision very, very easily. How much of the hole prior to like that four or five-game stretch at the end of the season, where if he starts to turn it around then, do you think it'd be difficult for him to climb out of?
Yeah, I think that as we keep the General Mills scoreboard, I think that at the start of the year, we wanted to be members of the Mills Mafia, and I think we expected there were going to be some bumps in the road. And maybe early on, there might have been a bump here or there.
Mm-hmm.
But to sit there on the scoreboard and say that the Over the Mills gang is 4-0 because he hasn't even shown a flash, I think the hole is already pretty deep. When you get into it even further, you look at a microcosm this year of what could be by looking at last year. Last year, he was really bad in his first stint. Then he came back in kind of a smaller sample size, and at the end of the year, showed you just enough that they were going to give him a chance this year. That is going to be a dreaded situation if you're Nick Caserio, because if he craps the bed for the first half of the season and he showed, you say he's 0-6, in terms of the General Mills scoreboard. But all of a sudden, in the second half of the season, you got a couple pushes. You got a couple times where you go, no, he helped win that game. He did some things. And then you go to the offseason, you're going to have people that are clamoring going, give him another chance. Give him a chance again. He deserves it. He should get it again. Well, why? Because he may get it anyway, like we just talked about. But that's fine that he might have done enough. He didn't erase everything that happened in the first half of the season. He just gave you a little glimpse of hope that he's starting to finally put some things together where he could be a serviceable quarterback. Serviceable, top 15, it's not good enough. We talked about it. Look at the AFC. Look at the landscape of young quarterbacks. It's not good enough.
The only way that I could get to that point is if you evaluate the quarterbacks at the top of the draft and you just turn out that you don't like them.
Yeah.
Like if Davis Mills is playing at a level, let's just say he replicates 21 at the end of 22, where he again looks like he's capable of being a starting quarterback in the NFL. You still have questions of whether he can be a franchise quarterback. You still have questions if he can be a top 15 quarterback in the NFL. You still have questions that he is a game manager, not a game winner. But like your decision to draft a quarterback at the top of the draft should be more because you're in love with those quarterbacks than you're trying to get over your ex, right? Like your next relationship partner should be somebody that you really enjoy, that you really like, that you really love, not because you're just trying to rebound from your ex.
Right.
Like that's where Nick Caserio has to be. Like that's the only way I can envision Davis Mills is not replaced, is that he plays to a solid month of the season, or maybe he turns it around this week, but he's playing pretty good. It's just replicating 2021. Nick Caserio doesn't like the size of Bryce Young. He thinks Will Levis is inaccurate, and he thinks CJ Stroud's a product of the system. He's not in love with those guys. So look, I don't want Caserio to draft a quarterback in spite of Davis Mills. I want Nick Caserio to draft a quarterback because he's in love with one of the quarterbacks. Now, I think he's going to be, because I like this quarterback draft class, but you shouldn't be so quick to move on because you hate Mills. You need to fall in love with one of the dudes
that's
in the draft
pool.
Yeah,
you've got to have good reason to move on and make the commitment to someone that you want to bill as your franchise quarterback. And that might be a different scenario that I'll paint for you, too. Take those three guys out of it, but say they're in love with someone that they feel like is maybe a sleeper in the draft
second
that they can
round
get
top
second
the,
round
yeah,
or later in the first round to where they don't have to go real high in the draft to get him. As long as they have conviction that who they're looking at is a guy that can really be the guy and be a difference maker, then I'm fine with it. Because like I said, of all the things that you can pick apart Nick Caserio for, the one thing that I firmly believe in is he's a really good talent evaluator, and he's proven to be pretty good at taking that talent evaluation and putting it to use in the draft. So I'm going to believe that if he has his eye on a guy, that he pretty much knows what he wants and he's got a guy that can probably play a little bit. That's why you make the change. You don't make the change just because you want it. Like, say, for example, Davis Mills is playing the way he's playing and last year's draft class is the one that you're facing in this year's draft. Well, guess what? Davis Mills, in my mind, is almost certainly going to be the starting quarterback for another year.
That's why I was like, no matter where you would have taken him, like, let's just assume it was Kenny Pickett because Kenny Pickett was the only first round quarterback. I'd rather have Kenyon Green and Davis Mills on this team than Kenny Pickett on this team. If you want to say Malik Willis, like in the second round, like let's just say you take him early second instead of Jalen Petrie, I'd rather Davis Mills be the current quarterback of this team and have Jalen Petrie than have Kenny Pickett or Malik Willis or anything like that. Now, Kenny Pickett was gone when you were picking Petrie. Malik Willis would go a round or two later. Like, there just wasn't a good quarterback in the draft. So the decision needs to be because you love a prospect, not because you love or you hate Davis Mills. 713-780-ESPN. Kevin Z, do you think getting rid of any quarterback competition this year has backfired against the Texans?
Well, I think that I've always been an advocate for competition at every position. But I think that this was a special set of circumstances because you had a guy that you really wanted to feel comfortable so that you could give him every possible chance to succeed. And I've said this over and over again, certain guys, and it's the same way as coaches, and coaches know this, as coaches, there are guys that you can tough love and try to coach up with, you know, being real hard on them. And there are guys that melt and wilt away when you try that technique. So you've got to coddle them and you've got to encourage them. And so to take all of those kind of possibilities out of the equation and just say, it is going to be your team this year. You don't have to look over your shoulder. You don't have to be worried. Just do the best you can to know the playbook, understand your role, do your job, and play your position to the best of your ability. Now, a year in, he also has to realize when he looks in the mirror and looks at tape, whether however long he does it, regular season, off season, whatever, he wasn't very good.
Yep.
So if he's not very good, he realizes he deserves to have competition this year.
I don't. The Texans didn't care about competition because this is not going to be pleasing to hear, especially those that get annoyed by the embrace the suck. Nick Caserio didn't build this roster to win.
Nope, like, not for this year.
He's building it to learn about certain players that could potentially be foundational pieces going forward. Entering the season, they asked themselves the question, is Davis Mills a foundational piece? They said, you know what? We don't know. Let's go find out in 2022. He's currently giving you that answer. 9512, y'all are blaming Mills far too much. The problem is coaching, in all capital letters. Hamilton is not good. See, this is kind of what's funny to me. And Mills has become like a divisive name and figure in Houston sports talk, almost to the point where Dusty Baker was, like, in the summer, right? Either you're all in on Dusty or you hated Dusty. Davis Mills is kind of the same way. Like, you can make excuses for Davis Mills. The offensive line can't block. There's not any playmakers. Pep Hamilton's terrible. If you want to blame the rush defense somehow, go ahead and do it. Both things can be true, because I don't think Pep Hamilton's a very good play caller. We were telling you this before the start of the season. I think he's average. Davis Mills could also not be a very good quarterback.
Here's my answer to that, Jeremy, and it's pretty simple. Because we don't disagree on Pep Hamilton. But here's the thing. Tell me, Texter, or whoever said that, tell me that Pep Hamilton had anything to do with the fact that Davis Mills couldn't throw an 8-yard out without throwing it into the second row and hitting a vendor in the back of the ass.
Yeah.
Tell me that when Nico Collins was wide open on third down with a clean pocket with no one around him and no one around Collins, why he couldn't put it in his area code so that he could bring it in and catch it. Those are the kind of things that we point a finger at Davis Mills, and you can't point it anywhere else. We said there was plenty of blame to go around. We said it wasn't just about blaming Davis Mills. You could blame coaching. You could blame the lack of complimentary players to help you out in certain situations. But the fact is, the brunt of this falls on the guy who can't make the easy plays.
Yep, I don't think Pep's scheming up like this masterful offense, but you just mentioned a bunch of regularly, like routine plays that a quarterback should be making in the NFL that he doesn't. Now, he'll make some spectacular plays every now and then, but then you have a 3rd and 6, guy wide open, nobody around him for 5 yards, and you can't complete the pass. I think both things are true. I don't think Mills is very good.
Well, Brandon Cooks is tiptoeing in the end zone in Denver. If he throws the ball anywhere from his thighs to his chest, and he threw it at his ankles.
713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's go there now. Jason, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's going on, Jason?
Hey, man, what's going on? I wanted to weigh in on the whole Davis Mills situation. Actually, the whole draft situation. I honestly think we should have drafted Malik Willis. I mean, I think we traded back to get John Metchie, right, which turned out to be, I mean, you know, unfortunately for him, he had cancer or what have you. But not wanting Davis Mills to look over his shoulder because another quarterback's there to possibly take his position is unrealistic. I mean, that's just what it is. If you're not good enough, then it's the next man up. And I just think, as far as, you know, skill and talent wise, he was way more dynamic than any of the other quarterbacks coming out of the draft. And the Texans, we never seem to, you know, to float that way to dynamic. We never look for dynamic. We look for, I don't know, some cookie cutter, you know, type of player, which never turns out to be something that we actually like or we need. I'll go ahead and hang up and listen.
Appreciate the call, Jason. Case Keenum was dynamic. I tease there. But
as a college player, yeah.
There is one huge exception. It's Deshaun Watson. Now, other than Deshaun Watson, I don't disagree with what Jason said. I don't think Malik Willis, and I can't blame Nick Caserio for not taking Malik Willis. Like, every team passed up on him almost 3 times. He went 86 in the draft. He went in the 3rd round. I don't think Malik Willis is a Nick Caserio guy. This is why I don't think Bryce Young's going to be a Texan. Nick Caserio, now his sample size as a GM is not very big. Drafted Davis Mills, signed Kyle Allen, draft Jeff Driscoll, if we even want to call him a quarterback. He likes big QBs from what we've seen. Mm-hmm. If you want to predate that and go back to New England, he likes big quarterbacks. Malik Willis, 6'1". Like, he's not short. He's not Kyler Murray. He's not Bryce Young. But I don't think Malik Willis is a Nick Caserio
right.
type.
He's not Baker Mayfield, but he's not the kind of guy that he wants behind center for his ideal team that's going to have sustained winning.
Now, to Jason's point, he's saying that's flawed logic, which is another conversation, and I don't know if I disagree.
Oh, to Jason's point, what I've always said that has always driven me nuts about, even when they had Deshaun Watson, was if you have a dynamic quarterback at all, you should also have a dynamic backup quarterback that can run the same plays and do the same kind of things. It always boggled my mind how you could have a dynamic quarterback and have a statuesque big, wide quarterback, like Brandon Whedon, playing behind him going, well, if he gets hurt, you got to rewrite the whole playbook just to execute some offense. It makes zero sense. I think that you're right. I think that in the case of like a Malik Willis, it isn't about not wanting a dynamic quarterback. It's just that he doesn't have the measurables of what Nick Caserio wants in a quarterback. I mean, we can make fun of Davis Mills' neck all we want, but in terms of his body type, his size, his arm, and everything like that, that's what Nick Caserio showed you exactly what he's looking for at the quarterback position. He's definitely not a general manager that's bought into this run as a big option for your quarterback. Your quarterback's supposed to stand in the pocket and make big throws.
Yeah. Now, you could argue that that's not the correct mindset.
I agree.
Which is Jason's point, I think. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Howard Balzer, who's
yes.
an NFL Hall of Fame voter, he makes his 2022 Killer Bee debut next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.